The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollock, and Kevin Negandhi with you. If you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate, review. Feedback is always welcome here on this Monday. Plenty of stuff on the Big Ten. We do a deep dive on the conference and our first reactions of what we saw. And we get you ready for Penn State, Ohio State. But, you know, ton of credit to Tom Allen and Indiana and what they did. And whether the conversion was good or not, it was ruled good on the field, and that's all that matters to Hoosiers. And we will talk about that in depth, as well as get the guys' thoughts on Alabama losing Jalen Waddle and what that means. Pollock has some strong viewpoints on the long-term hit that it will do to the Tide's offense deep into the season. Also, we give some love to Oklahoma State. They deserve it. And while Oklahoma State has built a reputation under Mike Gundy with their offense, it's not the offense that's stealing the headlines right now when it comes to the Cowboys' success. And one last thing before we chat with Herbie and Pollock, check out season two of ESPN Investigates. The Running Man tells the story of an obscure former Olympian and alleged serial sexual predator, and how a 14-month ESPN investigation brought him out of the shadows. More than 50 men were physically abused and mentally manipulated by their coach for over 40 years until they banded together decades later to find justice. Subscribe and listen now to ESPN Investigates, wherever you get your podcasts. Back to our college football podcast. Enjoy. And it's great to have Kirk Herbstreit and David Pollock here with us. First off, first real, let's just say, mid-fall experience. Welcome back, Big Ten, on the road in Minnesota as you dealt with the conditions. I know you guys joked around about it on Saturday morning that, you know, somewhere somebody said 33 degrees. It didn't look like it was 33 degrees. The temperature was dropping as the day continued. And welcome back, Michigan. Herbie, your first thoughts on what you saw with Joe Milton returning and Michigan and this offense trying to figure things out with the running game.
Well, you know, it'd be just like getting whatever we're in, week seven or week eight. It'd be just like, you know, the SEC starting, you know, for their first week. There's so many storylines. I mean, you could literally look at every game that was played. And the Northwestern was a story, you know, with what Peyton Ramsey did against Maryland and finally showing an offense in Evanston. What Purdue did without Jeff Brohm, finding a way to win at home against Iowa, was a great start. How about Greg Schiano, Rutgers? I mean, I don't care if Michigan State's down this year and rebuilding. The fact that Rutgers can win a game and look good defensively kind of talks about the culture, what Greg Schiano's trying to build. Indiana, we'll talk more about with that's probably the game of the day, the way that went back and forth. Not the prettiest game, but a really competitive game. Ohio State, obviously, with what they did, there's a lot to build on there. Plenty of room for improvement as they go back to the film room to look at that. Wisconsin on Friday night with Graham Mertz, that was a big story. And the game you talked about, the Michigan game, we all wanted to see Joe Milton. We've all talked about how Harbaugh has needed a quarterback. And I thought he was efficient. I think that's the greatest compliment you can give him. We know about the wow factor of the arm. What I loved in doing the game is that he didn't really force the issue or try to live up to any hype, or he just kind of ran their offense, almost like he was at a Thursday practice. You know, he just took what the defense gave him. And I was even more impressed with their offensive line with four new starters. I thought they controlled things up front. They're four deep at tailback. I mean, legitimately four deep at tailback. That was impressive. They will get tested, obviously, much more down the road. Their receivers with Ronnie Bell and company are going to have to continue to grow. Their defense with Dom Brown, I thought, was aggressive and attacking. So if you go back to how their season ended, losing to Ohio State in disappointing fashion, going to a bowl game, getting embarrassed by Alabama, if you're wondering how Michigan would ideally like to start the year of 2020 amidst COVID and having the season pushed back to October 24th. I don't know if the season could have started any better than what I saw from Michigan last Saturday night in Minneapolis.
I can't tell if you're excited the Big Ten's back, Kirk. I couldn't tell with that little filibuster you just dropped. No, but it was fun. It was fun to be on set like and rib each other and have you know, Ohio State back, and Michigan was awesome to watch. It was crazy to watch Rutgers. I mean, I thought that was one of the biggest things of the day to watch them. And then the finish with Indiana and Penn State, I think, sticks out because we were talking about Penn State. And are they the next, you know, team to be elite? What they start off just horrible. I mean, they start, by the way, you could just see the rust like crazy with fumbles and, yeah, you know, missed field goals and penalty, just missed opportunity after missed opportunity. Their defense actually played really well and gave them a chance, but the offense was way behind and struggled. And then Penix Jr. making that play at the end, by the way, what did y'all think about that? Just
I was going to ask you guys, I was with Bill Lamagnier, who's a former Big Ten official. And I'm telling you, I'd never seen a guy who takes so much pride in knowing every rule, all 5,327 of them. I mean, he knows them all. And he was perplexed. Mm. At first, he said, yes, for sure. Yep. You know, and he had his reasons why. I mean, he looked it up. He called other officials. I mean, he's calling people. We'd get to a break. He'd be like, oh, hey, Herbie, here's what's going on. I'm like, what, Michigan? Go back to Penix, and that overtime. I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, Penix, what happened? I mean, it finally at halftime, he goes, guys, I don't think that shouldn't have counted.
So no.
He dissected it, because I said right away, David, you helped me. The ball super slow-mo hits the ground.
Hits the ground.
And then the pylon.
Correct. Like I thought, but you know how it is, man. And that's what, you know, that's what's frustrating. That's why I think the review system could use a little tweak. I think it could go to the booth and, like, listen, there is no call. Like, make a call. You make a call from what you see in instant slow motion replay. Not it stands. I get annoyed with that. But listen, it was a heck of an effort. That's what's crazy, because the effort by that young man to reach his arm out, not put a knee down, not put a hip down, not put an elbow down. Like, that was awesome. It was unbelievable. He sold out. And because of that, he gets rewarded for it. And listen, and that's why I love it, because it was a great play. But the ball hit the ground. I mean, the ball hit the ground first and then went over the end zone. But, you know, either way, lessons being learned for Penn State, right? Like, you got to know better. You can't run the football in the end zone when you've got the game in hand and it's over. When you're outside the 10-yard line, you got to know that. And Tom Allen, by the way, to his credit, prepared his team, told him to let him score. By the way, we saw that on Sunday with the Detroit Lions and the Atlanta Falcons.
And Todd Gurley.
By the way, welcome to Atlanta. That's how we do things. We lose better than anybody. We find ways to screw things up more than anybody in the history of the world. But it was exciting. That was a fun game. I like having those close calls. But I think at the end of the day, when you're sitting back and you're watching Michigan, you go, man, is that what Harbaugh was going to be? Like, I expected their teams when he started to be smash mouth and pound you in the face. And I don't know what Joe Milton is to answer your question either, because he didn't have to do anything yet. But I do know that if you got a ground game like that against – by the way, Minnesota's not a cupcake. They're a good football team. I think they'll be solid throughout the season. So I just super impressed with Rutgers, super impressed with Indiana, and super impressed with Michigan by the end of the night.
Yeah, and I just to pick up there what you said about Penix's effort, it looked like when you're watching it live, there's no way he's getting the corner. I mean, Penn State's going to push him out of bounds at the very least, the best 1 yard line. And how he turned the corner, not only turned the corner, but full speed turned the corner and then went airborne. And as you said, didn't touch out of bounds with his legs. That was a heroic effort, and he ends up getting the benefit. I don't know if that went into the thinking, but the call on the field was that it was good, and I guess maybe they went with that. But, you know, they didn't have an angle right at the goal line. That angle from the side was at about the 2 yard line, and that may not sound like a lot, but the angle and where that was looking would have been really interesting to have it right at the goal line to give you maybe a different vantage point. But Penn State has nobody to blame but themselves. David just talked about it. He missed a couple field goals. Quarterback, who, by the way, manned up in the postgame and said, man, I was just out of sync, out of sorts, made some bad decisions, turned the ball over a couple times. Guys, they had the ball 40 minutes to Indiana 20, right? So they really dominated the stats. They just turned it over and had the penalties and missed field goals, and it's week one, right? I mean, and now the tough thing for them is they got to lick their wounds, and here comes Ohio State back into a corner, you know? I mean, this is – if there's ever been a must-win for James Franklin, it's this week against Ohio State.
Yeah, and Franklin – yeah, listen, Franklin – I consider Franklin a top 15 head coach, but he is – he's gone through a lot of things when it comes to clock management in Happy Valley, and the Penn State fan base has been hard on him, especially some of those wild games against Ohio State, and understanding, okay, the situation. And with Devin, you know, I feel so bad for the young man, because you're going against your natural instinct, right? Your natural instinct is to score, okay, and obviously football has changed in the last couple of years on how we process things, that, hey, don't give the other team the opportunity. So what was the messaging inside in Franklin? That was the huge storyline afterwards, or he's just like, I don't want to focus too much on it, but he's going to hear about it. And I'm with you. I didn't think Panic scored, but how about Tom Allen with the message to his team to say, you know what? Let's go for the win here. Let's not go back and forth and trade blow for blow and go for an extra point. I want to go for the win. That commitment and that belief, and that's why I think no one wants to face Indiana the rest of the way. And with Michigan down the road in a couple of weeks, I just can't say enough about what Tom Allen has done in year four at Indiana to try to make this team and this program believe. Because, guys, you've seen this in the past. This is a game Indiana would have lost in the past, right?
They're pulling Indiana
themselves in the foot, right?
This began that me and Kirk are talking on the bus, and we're going, hey, this is cool. Indiana's up. But you know what? In about 3 seconds, they're going to go, we're Indiana. We're not supposed
yes.
to win this. Like, that's what they've done. And that's what you assume.
They've been so close, right, David? I mean, against Michigan, against Ohio State, they're always right there. And then – it seems to slip through their fingers. This was huge. You know, I looked it up. The last time Indiana's had back-to-back winning seasons, I tweeted this out. I kept going back and looked year by year. They had like a winning year, and I want to say 07. You got to go all the way back. Dave, you might not have been born. 1993-94 was the last time Indiana had back-to-back winning seasons. That was when Bill Mowry was still the head coach. So last year, they get off to a great start in a shortened season. But Tom Allen's one of those dudes. I mean, we saw the video in the locker room. He's just one of those guys you could easily play for. You could easily imagine playing for. Does a great job. And his players clearly love him. You know, in an era where sometimes you wonder about the relationship between the players and the coaches in big-time college football, that has not resonated in Bloomington, Indiana.
Well, by the way, I think from a coaching standpoint, we are going to see we're going to make sure that clock management won't be an issue anymore with this stuff. I think coaches are going to get the message loud and clear, because you talked about James Frank. But that's coaching, by the way. At the end of the game, you have to be very clear with your players.
Yep.
I'm not running down the field to go score. Guys, this game is over. It doesn't matter whether I score a touchdown. The only way they're in this game is if I score a touchdown, the only way that they got a chance to be in this ballgame. You guys are running a couple yards, and you're going to get on the ground, and we're going to run the clock and run the clock and run the clock. So it is a coaching matter, but I think you watch the Falcons do it. You watch Penn State do it. I think all the coaches across the country see this, and they'll make sure this week it's handled in practice, and I bet you we don't see that again.
One last thing on the Big Ten, Kevin, is I just – Wisconsin, all the talk about Graham Mertz, and he was phenomenal, and let's hope he's okay. You know, we talked about it. You may have some updated information. I know he tested positive for COVID, but a remarkable first start in for Jack Cohn. And that was kind of the takeaway for most people, and it should have been. The kid played incredibly well. Most highly ranked quarterback they've ever recruited at Wisconsin. He lived up to it when he got his opportunity. But – I think one of the best coordinators in the country that not a lot of people even know is out there is Jim Leonard at Wisconsin. Yep. Their defense every year is as multiple as anybody's. It almost doesn't even matter who's on the team. They're just so well-schooled, and they prevent the big play. They get you to third down. They give you so many exotics, pre-snap to post-snap. He played at Wisconsin. He played in the NFL. The ultimate overachiever, Jim Rat. His team, kind of his defense, really buys into his approach. And I just think that it'd be interesting to watch them defensively this year while most of the attention is going towards that offense. Don't sleep on the Wisconsin defense. And they'll be tested a lot more, obviously, down the road. But he just does a very, very consistent job year in and year out there.
Yeah, the one thing we have to see, it's just one game, is can Wisconsin's backfield step up? And I don't know if they have the dynamic runner. No one's going to replace Taylor, but I don't know if they have the dynamic runner that they've had, you know, where it's become a tradition in the backfield, right? And so we'll see how that plays out for Wisconsin to help.
Ohio State, with all the talk about Justin Fields, there was some things there that I'm sure Ryan Day wanted to go back to the drawing board and say, Listen, man, five of the last 6 years, they've either had Zeke Elliott or J.K. Dobbins running the ball at Ohio State. 1 year they had Mike Weber, who's, you know, solid. But you're talking game changer NFL elite players in Dobbins and Elliott. And it's one game. I'm not saying they don't have it. I'm just saying what I saw from Master Teague and Trey Sermon made you kind of go, And the offensive line wasn't dominant at the line of scrimmage. Give Nebraska credit for their plan and how they attacked. But Justin Fields can't carry this team throwing the ball and running the ball every week. That'll be an area that Ryan Day will want to obviously address and try to clean up before they get ready for Penn State. And I even thought defensively, we've been so spoiled, you know, with the way Ohio State played last year. But if you go back to 18, remember we used to talk about what in the world is going on with Ohio State's run fits? This safety's going over there. That linebacker's over there. Maryland's gashing them. Purdue's gashing them. It just, it felt a little bit like that year. It's one game, plenty of time to improve it. But that was what it felt like in comparison to where they were a year ago. And remember, Jeff Hafley had a lot to do with that defense. He's now the head coach of Boston College. So let's see where they go defensively from 1 week to the next when they get ready for Penn State.
I'm with you on that too, by the way. I wasn't overly impressed with Ohio State. And again, you know, week one, and you say that and they win by 30, you know what I'm saying? Like, so it speaks to their talent 100%, but you know, I think we take it for granted with Jonathan Taylor. And we take it for granted with DeAndre Swift. And we take it for granted with J.K. Dobbins. You're like, wait a minute, you just find another great back. Those fall off trucks, right? Like you just order those at room service. Those are, you just bring them in at Ohio State. And I didn't see, the dynamic ability there, but I do see weapons palooza. And here's the thing about Ohio State. Last year out the gates, I thought Justin Fields actually struggled, and I didn't think he was making crisp, great reads. And you can tell he's already past that, which means, guess what? There's only a couple games they're going to need him to run the football. But when they get in the playoffs, that sucker can run the football and run it a lot if they need to, because he's a big, strong kid, even though he's on his vegan diet, Kirk, and he looks slim and trim. He's a trim 220. He's still a good-looking species. So I think that Ohio State, they're not going to get tested throughout the season very much and going to have to use that. But the offensive line, the defense, the running back spot, there's areas definitely to watch and see who emerges and who becomes the guy and who steps up big.
Yeah, the plant-based diet was down to 218, and he's still outstanding, and we'll see how that plays a role as the season continues when it comes to having durability and continued strength if you're running the football. Speaking of running the football, guys, Journey Brown didn't play the game, and obviously, you know, we don't know all the information, but, you know, he's dealing with a medical thing at Penn State, and Penn State's got a very talented backfield, but that was a huge concern watching this game for me. Well, you know, Devin Ford's there, of course, Noah Cain from a year ago, but it was really all Sean Clifford, and that has to get straightened out here heading into Saturday night. What do you guys anticipate to see from this game from Penn State and Ohio State and gathering the information after just one game? Herbie, let's start with you.
Journey Brown was definitely missed. Devin Ford averaged just over 3 yards a carry. I didn't hear a story. I watched the game, but it was one of those games that the volume wasn't up. Did Noah Cain, did something happen with him? Was he dinged? Was there an issue? He had three carries the whole game. I thought he would have been featured.
Same here.
More.
I didn't see anything. And I'm looking it up while we're talking. But, I mean, to have three carries in a game like this, it says that he was sidelined after suffering an ankle injury.
Okay. I have to assume something was going on there. But that's a spot, again, much like what we just talked about with Ohio State. I mean, you have Saquon Barkley and Miles Sanders. Journey Brown looked to be that kind of that next guy who was going to take them to just kind of maintain, you know, who they've been in the backfield. And, you know, they relied on Clifford like Ohio State relied on Justin Fields. And now they've got to get ready for Ohio State, who we just talked about, didn't necessarily have great fits, looked to be at times out of control defensively against the quarterback run game, against Adrian Martinez and McCaffrey got his chances to get in there. So, we'll see. You know, we don't want to overreact. It's 1 week for all these Big Ten teams. And as David and all of us know who follow the sport, I mean, the great teams from week one, they get home, they look at the film, the good and the bad, and they go, holy cow, what was I thinking? what were we collectively thinking on this and on that? Then you got to practice and you really got the great players' attention. And all of a sudden they're paying attention to detail at a whole nother level because they don't want to be embarrassed, you know, and they want to get better. And so you're going to see marked improvement from these teams, but it's a fair question. For both these teams, ironically playing each other, who the backs are going to be and who the difference makers can be in that backfield to help the quarterback and in the passing game out.
I hear you, Kirk, and I'd love to echo those sentiments, but I think Penn State's in some trouble. I don't. I know it's 1 week, and you don't overreact. And then great teams, I think you see from week one to week two usually make a pretty good jump, but I don't know. Clifford is I think I like everything about him. He's a winner, but you know, he's got to get more patience, presence in the pocket. You know, it can't be a take off and run all the time. He's a good athlete, but he's not an elite athlete that can single handedly put his team on his back. So,
like, you know, like Trace McSorley type of guy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Trace. Now, I even think Trace McSorley was, you know, he had Saquon Barkley. Like, that's a everybody's life's easier when you got a guy like that, but
had a lot of wiggle to him in that offense, you know.
Yes,
what I mean,
and Clifford doesn't have a lot of wiggle. He's got good speed and he's got good thickness.
Great line.
But more importantly for me too, I just the passing game. He's got to be able to throw balls on target. He's got to be able to read things in the pocket more and not take off. That doesn't need to be, you know. He reminds me of Bo Nix a little bit. Like, just evades a good pocket sometimes, and when he doesn't necessarily need to. So unless they improve a ton, I don't see this game being super close this weekend.
It's time now for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Kirk Herbstreit. Let's see where he thinks protection's going to really matter this weekend. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. Herbie, what's it look like now for you as you take a look at some of these, that, by the way, welcome back Big Ten, and now that they're in the conversation, when you take a look at the teams that you think making the playoffs?
Well, this is where it really gets fun. Every week, we're going to be taking a look at the All-State Playoff Predictor, and the All-State Playoff Predictor projects the top team's chances of making the college football playoff. I'll be pointing out where protection can really change the game. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. Now that the Big Ten's back, like you mentioned, I've been myself not ranking teams, and now it's the Pac-12, that are not playing. And so I waited to put Ohio State, for me, up into the top three teams until they actually played a game. You know, they went out and took care of business against Nebraska. I have Clemson still at one, Alabama right there at two, Ohio State at three. After that, I know it's conventional wisdom. Notre Dame's undefeated. They're coming off a big win against Pitt. Move them to four. I don't. I think differently. I watch all the teams. I watch all the potential. And I can still see with my eye that Georgia, I think, is a more complete team. I know they lost. I know there's an L in that column there. We got a check mark there. But I have no problem putting Georgia at four, really close to putting Oklahoma State at that next team. Even Michigan. I want to see how Michigan looks their next game. But for now, after Georgia, I'll put Notre Dame and then Oklahoma State. But The big question everybody wants to know is between Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, who potentially could be that fourth team? And Wisconsin's another team. You know, I know they have some quarterback issues, but another team that we should recognize and talk about as a team that can be fighting to try to get up into the top four or five.
You mentioned the quarterback issues there. That is the injury to Jack Cohn, and then what we saw from Graham Mertz, who looked amazing in his debut as the starting quarterback for Wisconsin against Illinois on Friday night. And they got a 47% chance, according to the playoff predictor. That is fourth best. Of course, Bama in first place, just under 87%. Then Clemson over 75%. Ohio State just behind them. At inside 75%, then Wisconsin, Georgia, Notre Dame, and then keep an eye, as Herbie's done this, he stayed true to form here, keep an eye on the Pac-12 as they enter the conversation in a couple weeks, and that features Oregon and USC, both of them at 20% and 16% respectively. Oklahoma State at 5%, we'll see this team tested in the next few games in front of them, especially some road games. That's where you find out where the Big 12 stands out. Good stuff, Herbie. Look forward to actually adding more teams as we continue this conversation into November. Let's transition here to a team that I think continues to surprise everybody. And with Spencer Sanders coming back, he was really good.
Temple.
No, Temple. Oh, sorry. Don't do this, Pollock. Don't do this. We won't get into the Temple conversation, maybe until Wednesday. Oklahoma State and what their defense is doing, they're showing me a lot and what they did in that win against Iowa State. But Spencer Sanders, I thought he came back and you saw the difference between him running this offense and no matter what, always composed throughout the game. And I thought that was a really good win. Now, Oklahoma State's going to be tested in the next three games because they've got some, you know, they've got some challenges, and you got Texas coming around the corner, and you never know in this conference. But so far, when we talk about the only undefeated team left, it's the Cowboys in the Big 12. What's your assessment on how do you judge a team like Oklahoma State, especially when defense suddenly becomes a story and you look at what they've done and they haven't given up more than 21 points all season per game?
I would just say that, number one, we talked about this on game day last week. It's not necessarily surprising that their defense is playing well. If you look how they finished last year, giving up about 24 points, which in the Big 12, the second half of the season, pretty good.
Yeah.
And when you bring 10 starters back off of that group, and I just know from being around Gundy and those players, the defense is one of those programs that never gets talked about. And the players kind of rally around that. They play with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder internally, collectively. That's like a rallying point for them. So they came into this year kind of anxious to show everybody, yeah, you guys talk about Hubbard. You talk about Sanders. You talk about Wallace. That's great. But we're going to win games because of defense, which is unheard of. We talk every week about how offense wins games in college football, especially in the Big 12. But they have a veteran defense. So when I watch Oklahoma State, David, I see situational awareness. I see a team that plays together. They were in control of that game. And when Oklahoma State can be in control and they can get a lead, even if it's only a one possession game, with the way their defense is playing with confidence, like I never felt, even though the game was close, you never felt watching the game that Iowa State was on the verge of exploding and taking control. So I think they play good football together. I think they're aware of each other, and it's not just the defense. It's not just the offense. They play as a team, and I think they're going to be a tough out for anybody that they play in the Big 12.
I agree. And the thing I think the most about watching that game was, as a guy that picked Iowa State and thought Iowa State was going to win, I don't think there was any doubt in my mind the whole game that Oklahoma State was the best team. Like, at no point did I look at that and go, Iowa State should be. Now, listen, Kohler, the big drop, you know, late, that might have changed things. But, I mean, it was clear domination. Their defense swarms, plays so hard, plays so disciplined, plays so tough. But I thought, to me, the biggest difference was having Spencer Sanders. And it's just his, like, it's not a surprise that Chuba Hubbard had his best day, because Sanders takes pressure off of him. That's what they can get in the quarterback run game. They booted him a lot. They play actioned a lot. Like, I think that it makes this team way more complete, way more, dynamic. They can hold the ball a little bit longer. They can sustain drives, put drives together. So I think them getting Spencer Sanders back definitely gives them a chance to compete more at a higher level and compete with the higher teams and possibly, you know, run this gauntlet in the Big 12. I think they've got a decent chance to, over the next games. I don't know if they're dynamic enough to stay undefeated, but, you know, the defense will keep them in games. But I thought Spencer Sanders coming back was a big difference.
Yeah, that was definitely true. I saw the same thing, David. I would just say he's got to do a better job at taking care of the ball. You know, he hadn't played a ton of ball this year, but that offense with him in there, that's their identity. You know, that's who we all kind of envisioned. Yeah, he can throw it, but he can create. And I think you're right, because of his legs, defenses on the edge of their defenses have to constantly be in tune to the potential of what he can do. Whereas that's not even a thought, you know, with the pressure. So I think that's there's still a long way to go for these dudes. I mean, they've gotten through Iowa State, but every game that they play, I mean, think about who they still have to play. I'm just saying athletically. So that's where that complementary football, the maturity, the veterans on defense, will come into play, because they got Texas on the road in Manhattan. They got to go to Norman. Everybody they play at TCU, Texas Tech, at Baylor. I mean, there's maybe a couple on there that you're like, yeah, they're good. But there's others on there that just athletically they'll be in a dogfight, and that's where I think that maturity and experience and, like I said, complementary football will be big for them. Be fun to watch.
A ton of credit to Kansas State. It's such a tough place to play, but they continue to do it with special teams over the weekend. And of course they play Kansas, but defense and no Skylar Thompson, they're undefeated in the conference. And then,
they play enormous. Kansas.
Yes. Hey, come on.
But you know, everybody does that versus Kansas. So,
Kansas, get ready for basketball season. We all know that, like where they're at right now. It's just brutal. Hey,
Will Howard coming in there.
Yes. You know?
That's I don't care if you're playing Kansas. I mean, it's still a rivalry game, and he hadn't played a ton of football. And
you know who's died and gone to heaven, by the way, is Khalil Herbert. He's like, thank you, Jesus, for getting me out of Kansas. This is amazing.
We haven't talked about this, but I want to transition to the SEC.
Let's play football, Kirk.
Well, listen.
Okay, let's go there.
We did a lot of focusing on the SEC in the last few weeks, but unfortunately, we have to talk about this because he's one of the biggest names in all of college football, and for the sport to lose Jalen Waddle on that opening kick with just a tough break. They are so loaded. They have so many weapons. They just keep on going, doing what they're doing against Tennessee. But still, the loss, the overall impact, and the excitement, the dynamic player that Jalen Waddle is. And I know Nick took a lot of heat at halftime for, you know, saying that he shouldn't have taken the ball deep in the end zone. You could see that he was frustrated. I wish he didn't say it, but you could see that he was frustrated about the whole situation. And once again, you lose two a year. Now you lose Jalen Waddle here. Does that change anything? Not so much in the race in the SEC, but in the playoff impact when you look at losing a guy like Jalen Waddle, Herbie?
Number one, it's nobody's fault. These guys play football. It's what you do. Injuries happen. Just because he has a bright future, you know, you're not treating him with kid gloves. You let him play. You scrap it on. You play football. That's what you do. I mean, you're a competitor. Number two, our condolences, our thoughts, all three of us. We love watching him play, love the person that he is. It sounds like from everything I've read and heard that this procedure will be very, very clean, and he'll have a chance to come back as strong, if not even stronger. So that's all great for him and his future. To say that they just throw in the next guy, I think we're all probably going to be in agreement here, is ridiculous. They have Mitchie and, of course, Devontae Smith and Najee Harris, Forrestall at tight end. It looks like this guy, Slade Bolden, who we've seen a little bit, will come in and play the slot. But if I'm defending Alabama and I got 17 over there in the slot to go along with all the other weapons, holy cow, where do I start? And I'm not taking anything away from Bolden. He looks like he's a solid player. He wouldn't be at Alabama. But you're talking about quick as a hiccup, hold your breath every single time Jalen Waddle got the ball. I'm talking yards after the catch. He's now become a vertical threat. Total package, as good as there is in college football. So you can't take that out and say, whoop, whoop, hey, good luck to you. Good luck in rehab. We're business as usual. Now, against maybe most teams they play, it may not be a factor. But when they get in against the better defenses, and they get in against games where they need a dynamic play, you can't just turn, you know, to Devontae Smith. You can't just go to Najee Harris, a different kind of playmaker. So, David, to me, that's, you know, our thoughts first and foremost with him and the injury that he sustained. But let's not pretend that that's not a significant loss to that offense.
I think it's over for Bama. I think if you're just talking about winning a national title, I don't think they can win a national title without. But by the way, like, yes, Bama's recruited at a high level, but you don't have like 4-2 guys. Well, Bama actually, Ruggs and him last year, the last 2 years. You don't have 4-2, 4-3 guys, you know, sitting around. And when you look at their game plan and what they do, they are like, this is a different team than it was a year ago. It's not RPO driven. It's run the football and play action. And they stack those guys, Devontae Smith and him together, where you can't jam them and you can't double them because they put them on the same side of the field. So, and it just makes life absolutely miserable on you. So I think this is a huge blow, man. And listen, every team, you know, you could do this with every team. You take away a stud like that, but especially a team like Alabama that, by the way, they're just, the most balanced, and Mac Jones is one of the best deep ball throwers because Waddle is a guy that adjusts to the football and has so much speed to stress the defense. So I just, it stinks, and I hate it for them. And I think that Bama just went from a team that I think could win a championship, and you lose a guy like that, that caliber, I don't think you can win a championship without him.
That's bold. And are you thinking now big picture after the SEC, or do you think now that they're going to run into some trouble later in the season in the SEC? When you say, you know, big picture here, it's done with their national championship hopes.
I think playoffs, when you get the playoffs, obviously it's a huge loss and something you can't overcome, because I'm thinking about guys you got to outscore. But when you're talking about playing against Georgia, I think Waddle had a 90-yard touchdown catch. Waddle had, you know, over 160 receiving. Like, I think it matters. I think the Georgia game, it comes into play first before you even get to the playoffs. But listen, Kevin, he might still get in the playoffs regardless if they lose a close game to Georgia. But I think it affects him for the Georgia game for sure, and then for the playoffs even more.
Yeah, it's tough. It's just it's part of the game, but it's a shame because he's one of the most exciting players, if not the most exciting player in the country. By the way, if you're listening here and you're wondering what the heck's going on, our boy is on a golf course at a charity event, so he's helping the cause. But we want to know where you're at right now. What hole are you on, and what's your best shot so far?
We are on hole 6. We already got 4 holes on the other side, so. I think that's what that means. You call it a side. What do you call it?
Shotgun start.
Yeah, whatever. Shotgun start. Whatever that means. but we're slapping the little white ball around, and it's going well. And we're not winning the tournament, to be very clear. Like, this is a fellowship and supporting our local North Oconee baseball team. It's not to win. We don't have ringers. We actually have a bunch of scrubs, but we love each other and we love hanging out. So it's going to be enjoyable.
Now, are you the type of person to measure how well you're playing by how many balls you've lost as the day continues? Have you lost anything in a shotgun?
I think I lost one.
Okay, not bad.
I might have lost one, but you know, it makes it really easy. I got my buddy Scott with me, and he's a really good golfer. And so when he hits one in the fairway, I don't choose to swing and hit. So if you hit one out there, then there's no point in me hitting the ball. So he's the only one that's really any good. But I don't hit practice. Kirk, I know you're gonna be surprised by this, Kirk. I don't swing practice swings. Wow. I stand up over the ball, I line up, and I take the club back, and I swing and I hit it. We're not gonna overthink this crap, and we're not gonna do like practice swings and act like we know what we're talking about. We're just gonna make solid contact, let the ball go down the fairway.
Yeah, don't play golf with Pollock. He acts like he doesn't even know what a golf club is, and then he'll shoot a 78. So I'm sure he's the what? How many are in your group? Just 2 of you, or do you have 4 of you together?
No, we have 4 of us. We got 4 of us, and you do the thing where all you hit, and then you get to go.
I know. Yeah, here that thing you do. I think all 4 of us we hit. Like, meanwhile, they're using his shot like every shot. Like when I play in a foursome, everyone's like, "Oh, we got hurt me." They watch the first shot and they're like, "Oh God, how many shots do we have to use at his shot of throughout the first 9? one of fives? Okay. Pollock, they're just using every shot, and he's
out. I want to know how many towels you go through on a hot day when you play golf. That's what I'd love to know.
Well, that's why I play 9, and then I go into the men's grill and eat a sandwich and a cup of soup and shut it down.
That's the way to go. You got the rest of the day.
I'd rather do squats.
By the way, Kev, he had the AC. He had the AC on in Minnesota this week.
No, he didn't. No.
Yeah. I just run hot. I have if I play golf in Nashville, Tennessee, that's why I don't play anymore. Then it's July or August. Like, if you want to just mistreat me, ask me to go play golf at like noon in Nashville in July 12th. I will have the Mississippi River running down my spine by the time I get to the first tee. And then I hit a bad shot, and I'm like, I'm good. Everybody good? I'm ready to go. Let's go to the
ready to go, yeah. So
you need to come down to Georgia, where it's nice and humid, even more so, and come down here and sweat a little bit.
I'm good.
I'm blown away that you had the AC in Minnesota. That's just great. Good stuff.
I have it everywhere.
They're going to Happy Valley this weekend, right? So obviously the setting is a little bit different with the expectation of 2 teams coming in undefeated at 1-0. But regardless, the environment will be still great. Won't be a whiteout, but we know that the Penn State fan base will still be out there in support for a game like this. And, hey, you're still at Beaver Stadium under the lights. on primetime. There's nothing better than that. And Herbie, be safe. Have fun out there. And don't kill anybody on the golf course, Pollock. All right. Big thanks to, of course, Herb Street for joining us, and Pollock fitting us in his very busy golfing schedule. I look forward to hearing I look forward to him bragging about what he did on the golf course on Wednesday, because he's not shy about patting himself on the back. And then we'll go through our picks on Wednesday, and Heather Dinich will join us with a closer look at the Big 12 and maybe the team that has the that's carrying the flag for the conference. It could be their hope to make the playoff. Much more on the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Big thanks, as usual, to Taylor Schwenk on the other side for getting this together, our producer of the College Football Podcast. And until Wednesday, stay safe. Want more football? Social distance, wear a mask. Thanks.